What's going on, Suns fans? Justin here, and with me, as always, is my podcasting partner, Paul.
I have nipples, Greg. You milk me.
And welcome to this episode of Fanning the Flames, your one and only Phoenix Suns podcast that is made for the fans. That is you guys. By the fans, that is us. As always, intro and outro music provided by Oceans Over Airplanes,
also known as
submarines, I feel. Check them out over at oceansoverairplanes.com.
I think that's a Bond movie thing.
Is it?
Yeah, there's like an airplane that goes under the water.
Oh, we'll have to research that and talk about it next time. Okay.
Yeah, because we do research.
Totally. All the time. So much research.
We don't have real jobs.
Anyway, that took us 20 seconds to get on a tangent.
Hey,
Paul.
Hey, I don't think that's our record, but it's close.
Yeah, probably. So anyway, on this episode this week, we're going over a few different topics. One being, if the roster stays the same, if everything stands pat going into the regular season, who's going to start at point guard? Next, we're going to talk about, segueing in, the Jimmy Butler situation in Minnesota and whether the Suns should try to get involved in a Butler trade, and if so, how? And last but not least, amongst perhaps other tangents, early returns from training camp. We're recording here on a Tuesday. Training camp day one occurred today. We got a little bit of feedback on how some folks are picking up on the system, and we will give our thoughts, comments, observations,
questions,
on that.
Concerns.
All of those. All of the above will come into play. All right, Paul.
Yes, sir.
First things first. Let's assume that the roster stays the same. So everyone's been talking for the past however many weeks about the Suns have to do something at point guard. Something has to happen, especially since Brandon Knight was traded.
The assumption was that something was in the pipeline.
Right.
But a month later.
Training camp has started. Nothing has happened. So let's assume, and Butler hasn't been traded yet, so maybe something will happen. But we'll get into that. But let's assume that the roster stays the same. Who is going to start at the one for the Phoenix Suns this year, Paul?
My gut is weirdly telling me Melton.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Whoa.
I know.
I'm not going to lie. I did not see that coming at all.
I'm going to explain it.
Please do.
A little bit. Just one. Melton and Okobo are the only two of those four that have guaranteed deals for this year. Shaq Harrison has a deal. He's got like a $50,000 guarantee. That's basically pocket change to an NBA team. And Cannon is on a training camp deal. He does not have a guaranteed deal. If he had a guaranteed deal, I would probably say Cannon. But the Suns have to make roster cuts somewhere. And I can easily see one of those two guys going, Harrison or Cannon, just depending on how training camp falls out. And if Cannon is the one guy who makes the team, I would say it's him, but I can see a scenario where he doesn't make the team. And in that situation, I can Melton showed out really well during Summer League. Not that Okobo didn't either, but Melton, he's expected to be a really good defensive player. He's shown that already from what I've heard in previews, or not previews, but roundups from Summer League and whatnot. He did play very well defensively in Summer League, which nobody plays good defense in Summer League, but he graded out pretty well defensively there. And I think he's a pretty decent distributor as well. Like, for all intents and purposes, all the guys in that position, I would say Cannon's the best distributor. But I think it's a wide open competition, so I could see any of those guys having that spot, and I can see him maybe coming out with it.
Does Melton show some promise? Sure. Is he ready to be a starting NBA point guard?
Are any of them, though?
It's a fair point, but is he going to ultimately be a point guard as his primary position in the NBA?
Well, I mean, if we're looking for a Patrick Beverley type to be the co-member of the backcourt with Booker, because Booker's really going to, like, the offense is going to flow through him, and we need a guy who can bring up the ball, initiate the offense to allow Booker to kind of do his thing, run a fast break, play solid defense to be able to cover for Booker and hit a three, assuming he hits three of those four right now, and assuming he can develop a three-point shot, Beverly was a second-round pick, if not undrafted, I can't remember. He could be the next generation Patrick Beverly. So if that's what we're looking for, we might as well just insert him.
My gut tells me that it's going to be Shaq Harrison, just based on the roster makeup, based on the fact that Isaiah Cannon missed a ton of time with that injury. And while he's back and available, who knows what kind of shape he's going to be in when the regular season rolls around, if he's still on the roster.
Right.
My preference would be to, frankly, let Eliakobo jump in there as a starter. I mean, the Suns took him with the first pick of the second round. They gave him a guaranteed deal. He would have projected or could have been projected higher if he wasn't intent on wanting to come over immediately.
Right.
And ultimately, we've seen the stats that he put up over in the French League, and that's professional basketball. That's a different level than what DeAnthony Melton played. And keep in mind, Melton didn't play last year at all.
Right.
So he's played, five games in the past 12 months? We're talking competitive basketball.
Right.
And if you're bringing in, Eliakobo to presumably be at some point in the future either the starting point guard of the Suns for the long term or at least a serviceable backup, then why not give him the opportunity? Now, the reason I say that I think it's going to be Shaq Harrison is because he's got familiarity with the team already. He showed well during Summer League and has that defensive capability that you're referring to with Melton. And again, I look at the concept of bringing young players along a little bit slower, letting him acclimate, and him being a Kobo, acclimate himself to the NBA game, acclimate himself to living in the United States, and maybe it makes a little sense to bring him along slowly. I think the cautious move for the Suns, knowing that, frankly, whoever they end up starting isn't going to be the end-all, be-all. He's not going to be this huge difference maker. You're not having Steve Nash come in. You're not having Jason Kidd come in. You're not having
Kevin Johnson,
Brandon Knight come in.
This is true. Eric Bledsoe.
You know, you may as well take the cautious approach, let him get himself used to the NBA, used to the speed of the game over here in the States. And not to denigrate French basketball, but that's not the NBA. So I would prefer that it be a Kobo. I just don't know that the Suns are going to pull that trigger. Now, that being said, McDonough has obviously spoken very highly of a Kobo, and it's going to depend on what goes on during training camp, how he looks in preseason and whatnot. But we're stuck right now with really a kind of a hodgepodge rotation of potential ones.
Right.
And I'll caveat all of this conversation with, we're assuming that it's not going to be Booker. Because it could be Booker.
I was actually about to bring that up. Because, I mean, what happens if during training camp, let's say Bridges is in there playing the two slot. And he's really showing out. He's really showing something at that two spot. But at the same time, you have Ariza and Anderson also showing out. What's to stop Koshkov from starting Booker at the one, Bridges, Ariza, Anderson, and then Ayton at the five? Because then you've got four shooters. Like, you can't. That's our four best shooters.
Hold on. So you're just throwing Bridges in front of both Jackson and Warren for starting minutes?
In a situation where I'm expecting the Suns to want to play a lot of four out. With Ayton down low and just spreading with, like, every guy is a threat. Right now, Jackson hasn't proven he's a threat. Warren is a threat from, like, 20 feet. He just really can't get that extra foot for whatever damn reason. He can't get that extra foot, even in the corners. But supposedly he's been working on that. But we know Bridges is a threat from college. Anderson and Ariza and Booker have obviously proven it in the league that they're threats from three. So if you really want to play a four-out lineup, that's your lineup. Granted, doesn't need to be the starting lineup, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see that lineup.
Like
a good chunk of minutes. But, I mean, at the same time, I could see a lineup of, you know, Bridges and Jackson at the 2-3. That I think that could work pretty well. Bridges, Jackson, Warren could be interesting. There's a lot of lineups that could be interesting, but I'll save that for later.
So then, all of that being said, if I was
the coach,
Igor Kokoschkov, who would be starting at the one for you? And if it's Booker, who would be starting at the two?
I would start Booker at the two because his playmaking is a secondary skill. I don't need that to be his primary skill.
Sure.
So with that, I would probably, if I was in control of the team based on the four guys we've got right there, I'd probably start Cannon if I was in charge. Just because he's the best distributor of the group. He's familiar with a lot of the guys in that lineup, at least half the team, because he of those four guys, he has the most starts in the NBA.
Because
Harrison only started two games. Cannon was the starter. Like, he's the reason Mike James got bounced.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that you think it's going to be D'Anthony Melton.
Right.
But if it were up to you,
It
would be Cannon. I'll still disagree with you thinking that it's going to be D'Anthony Melton. Maybe I'll be wrong. But
I know it's a long shot, to be honest.
Are you backtracking now?
I'm not backtracking. No, I can see the.
Should we start over? In retrospect, maybe I was wrong about that. Let me go back, rewind, restart.
I mean, even just from the standpoint of the Suns had an opportunity to draft D'Anthony Melton, and they chose to draft Okobo.
Mm-hmm.
Just from that standpoint, there's Okobo's already got a check in a box of, hey, we like him more than we like him. Granted, what actually happens on the court can really change those opinions.
Well, I mean, and if you look at it, again, Okobo slipped down a bit because of, you know, his position in terms of wanting to come over to the NBA mm-hmm. and other teams not being willing.
Because he didn't play. I mean, if he had played another year, like he graded out with a lot of guys because I was listening to another podcast where they were talking about the Suns and like their offseason and whatnot. And he was like, he's a guy I wish I remember his name. I did not prep for this at all. Our standard MO. He was just talking. He literally watched every single summer league game. If he couldn't watch it live, he like watched the tape of it and like graded out every guy. And he's a big draft guy. He had Okobo and Melton on his draft board pre-summer league, pre-draft at 17 and 18.
Okay.
Like, basically, these are the two guys, after the lottery's done, these are my next two guys to be drafted. I mean, I guess my biggest fear is we're repeating the Bender-Chris scenario. Granted, these guys are both second-round picks, so the buy-in is a lot lower, but we may be, instead of putting all our eggs in one basket and being like, okay, we're going to ride with you, you are the chosen diamond in the rough that we think we found. We're like, We're hedging our bets with this other diamond in the rough and hoping that one of you develops when, in actuality, by putting that situation in place, we are hindering the development of both of you.
That segues right into what's going on with Jimmy Butler up in Minnesota right now.
Yeah, that's a shit show.
At least we can say this offseason the Suns front office has not been the most obnoxiously ridiculous front office in the NBA.
We've done some head-scratching things.
Right, but there hasn't been an overtly public dispute amongst the GM/coach and the owner of the team.
No, we just had that last year.
Right. That's what I said this offseason. Totally. This is a different world right now, Paul. We're talking about a different world. I know. So,
we have positive buzz.
Podcast of optimism, my friend. So,
unless you're Ben Golliver.
let's not go down that path. We'll save that for Twitter. So Jimmy Butler obviously wants out of Minnesota. Cat wants Jimmy Butler out of Minnesota. Pretty much everybody involved
wants Butler.
Yeah, everybody involved with the Minnesota franchise, save for Tom Thibodeau, wants Butler out of Minnesota because he wants to recreate the Chicago Bulls there. And Todd, well, yeah,
and probably Derrick Rose.
Right? Yeah.
Actually, no. Didn't Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose not get along on the Bulls?
I don't know.
I think they didn't get along on the Bulls.
Let's go with that. We'll go with that. Butler demanded a trade, named his three top teams as the Clippers, the Knicks, and the Nets. Am I getting that right? That's right, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, today
he wanted,
it's
he,
come
he,
up.
He wanted a major market, but he didn't want to play with LeBron, which tells you something.
LeBron's a douche?
Yes.
Is that what it is? Is that just me interjecting my own thoughts in this situation? Is that what's happening right here? Today, apparently, word circulated the Heat are making a push to get him. I saw a report online saying Sacramento's interested in becoming a third team that could get involved with that, which leads into the question, should the Suns get involved? And I think we've probably all gotten to the point where we're thinking the Suns shouldn't get involved if it means trying to get Jimmy Butler. We don't need any more wings. We don't need Jimmy Butler on this. Well, I shouldn't say we don't need Jimmy Butler on this team, but long-term goal, it's not going to help the Suns.
Right.
So should the Suns try to throw their hats in the ring as a third team to help facilitate a trade? And if so, how should they do so?
So first off, I wanted to real quick just address the point of should the Suns actually try to get Jimmy Butler. I just wanted to make the point that at a certain point, the Suns do need to push their chips in.
Mm-hmm. Can't just do it to do it, though.
No, you can't just do it to do it.
If they've waited this long, this isn't the time to finally be like, ah, forget it. We're going to go ahead and just do it. No.
Right.
No.
But anyways, the question was, should the Suns get involved?
Should they? And if so, how?
I think they should, because a lot of the teams that are involved have point guards that the Suns have been considered targeting for that potential starter role, whether it's Tyus Jones on the Minnesota Timberwolves, whether it's either Patrick Beverley or Milos Teodosic on the Clippers, whether it is Spencer Dinwiddie over on the Nets, or in the right situation, maybe even D'Angelo Russell.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I doubt he'd come available. I think the Nets are very, very high on him, much higher than they are on Dinwiddie. So I think Dinwiddie would be the one who'd be more available. Or who's on the Knicks? I don't even know.
Frank Nicolina?
I don't think the Knicks are ready to give up on him.
I'd agree with you.
Granted, if the Timberwolves could somehow turn it into a bidding war between those three teams, because those are the teams that Butler has said he would sign an extension with, their risk is lower.
Mm-hmm.
That they'd be giving up a lot of assets for 1 year of Jimmy Butler. So there could be a possibility that Frankie Nicotine, because I can't say his name, could be part of a trade. And in Minnesota's current situation, they have two point guards already in place between Jeff Teague and Tyus Jones. So they may not want to take him on, but shifting around some salary, we do have Darrell Arthur's contract that could be thrown in there that is just a one-year waivable contract. We have other players. If they really want a player, we have Troy Daniels is available. If it got big enough and the player we were getting, like maybe even a Frankie Smoke situation, would be big enough to warrant including Jimmy Butler in the deal. Depending on what's coming back from New York, if the Suns were getting Frank and Knicks were getting Jimmy Butler, T.J. Warren's not a bad consolation prize
sure. To
go to Minnesota to kind of fill that small forward role.
Sure.
And that's completely forgetting about the Heat, who have been a late comer into the situation and apparently are pretty aggressive about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have some point guard, at least a point guard, who the Suns are very familiar with on their roster.
Who's that?
I don't know. Another dragon? Get two-headed dragons?
Zoran Dragic?
Zoran Dragic, yes.
So your conclusion is?
Who should they go for?
Yeah, I mean, let's put it like this. Let's assume the Suns are a third team in that trade. What's the most likely guy that they land out of that situation? How about that?
Most likely guy they'd land out of the situation.
Yeah, what's the most realistic possibility in terms of the Suns getting involved in the Jimmy Butler trade and ending up with a point guard that presumably is a better suited point guard to be starting for this team than the guys we went through and discussed earlier in this episode.
The most realistic situation is probably the Clippers, that the Suns would definitely come out with a point guard, because the Clippers have like four. I mean, the Suns have four, but the Clippers have two that like actually could warrant starters minutes. Plus they have, plus they're looking to move on to the, like, they have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and I think they have another guy that they drafted, so who's also a point guard, or I can't remember. I know they got like four guys, and they want to be moving on to those younger guys. So moving one of the older guys makes sense. Which one it is, I don't know, but either one of those guys would work well for the Suns for different reasons. Teodosic would really help push that energy and get that ball moving in the Igor's offense. Patrick Beverley could help secure the defense. I mean, if you'd make those two guys one player, he'd be Chris Paul.
He'd be beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah, I mean, I think the Suns have to make a run, obviously, at getting involved in this trade. And this trade's going to happen. It has to happen at some point. I'm frankly surprised that it hasn't happened yet, considering training camps are starting and whatnot.
I'm not surprised at it, because Thibodeau loves Jimmy Butler. He doesn't want him to leave. Like, if Thibodeau had his druthers, I think he would trade Cat to keep Butler.
Possibly, but that's, at a certain point, you can't really rely on that, and you have to accept the fate that is inevitable and try to get your best return on investment, right?
Right. I'm just saying that in the situation of assuming it's central to beef between Butler and Cat, Thibodeau would prefer to move Cat, but the owner is smart enough to be like, no, he's actually the future of our team, not this other guy.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the Suns have to make a run, again, at getting involved. Do I think it's actually going to happen? I'm hesitant to say, yeah, dubious at best to say that it will, just because while the lottery balls fell in the Suns' favor, the Suns got DeAndre, and things seem to be trending in a positive direction. I just have this feeling that it's not going to happen. The Suns aren't going to be involved in this, and I'm not. You know, in the short run, in the short term, is that better for the Suns? No. But in the long run, you know, maybe that opens something up further down the line as we get closer to the trade deadline and certain teams are wanting to unload guys. Keeps an opportunity open for the next offseason when we've got guys like Kemba who are going to be free agents. You know,
Rozier.
If the Suns don't get involved, it's not the end of the world.
Right.
If they can and it's reasonable, then sure. But you have to also consider what the Suns would have to possibly give up to get into that. Obviously, we have a glut at wing. TJ Warren gets involved, that's fine. If you're saying it's Josh Jackson, then it depends on who you're getting back. But I'm not exactly going to be as quick to jump on the bandwagon and say, yeah, that's a move that the Suns have to make.
Right. And why are the Suns the ones who are putting in like one of the best pieces in the trade?
Right. Right. And
to help out another team get Jimmy Butler.
Right. And that being said, at the same time, Ryan McDonough's kind of got to make something happen. You know, he's approaching that make or break point. We've said it before on this podcast, and I'm sure we'll say it again, but this is now his team. He doesn't have the excuse of, we had a near playoff hit that put the rebuild back a couple of years.
Right.
He has had 3 years in a row of multiple lottery picks.
Right.
And it's getting to the make it or break it point for him.
You know, I mean, his contract only runs through next season.
Right. So he very well could be a little desperate and might push in too much, but we'll see. If I had a gun to my head, if I had money on the line, I would say that what we're seeing with this Suns lineup right now, with this roster, is what we're going to have going into the season. Now, that's not to say a trade's not going to happen at some point, but I'm just not optimistic that the Suns are going to be getting involved in any Butler trade.
Right.
And plus, you have other teams like the Kings who have assets they can trade as well, have, you know, the potential of allowing other teams to free up cap space. they might be able to trump whatever the Suns might offer, which is why, again, going back to the whole concept of Jackson being involved, makes me a little concerned that maybe McDonough will push in a little harder than you would expect him to push in a trade like this.
I wouldn't be surprised if the opposite has currently been true of like because the Suns don't really have leverage in this situation. It's they clearly have a hole at this position. It's clearly a position of need that they're trying to fill. And the teams they're talking to are just like, you're going to have to blow us out of the water to get this guy who we kind of don't need, but it doesn't mean we're going to get rid of him. And the McDonough's like gun shy to put in that like too much.
I hope so.
So do I. But at the same point, I mean, there's a level of overpay that I would find acceptable. And I'm afraid that he's not even willing to go that far.
Well, what's that level?
Well, okay, here's an example. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So let's say we go back to the Jimmy Butler trade. And the idea, and then the Suns get involved in that. And the player, the Suns going out the door is TJ Warren. Coming in the door is Tyus Jones. That's it. Is that an overpay? That's essentially an overpay.
That would be an overpay, but it alleviates the glut of wings and gets a serviceable player in return.
Right.
I wouldn't be psyched about that idea. I wouldn't exactly like be trading in my Suns fan card and being right. Like, I'm out.
I mean, I guess like the other concern I have about like Tyus, like of the point guards that are on the market that are possible trade targets, like Tyus Jones is probably the lowest one on my list. Mm-hmm. Just because he's not much less of a question mark than the guys we already have on the team. He's been playing the league for a couple of years, but he's basically been at a backup role. I think like, would he average something like 7 points and like 3 assists or something?
He averaged 5.1 points and 2.8 assists last season.
Right. So, I mean, there's potential there that he could be a starter, but he hasn't proved it in any way like any of those other guys that are on that list. I mean,
so why not just stand pat?
Right.
That's fair.
To an extent, or make sure you're really going for one of those other guys who like is a guaranteed starter, because that's what they need. Just bring in another guy to compete as part of a competition
doesn't make sense.
Not
when you already have kind of an overloaded competition of guys who are at least presumably on a somewhat same right. level.
Whereas to flip that, like if it is a trade with the Clippers, which is why I think being able to pull the most likely scenario would be getting a point guard from the Clippers, because the Timberwolves don't want another point guard. They've got a starter. They've got, and like supposedly Andrew Wiggins can do some playmaking as well, and they've got a solid backup in Jones, and they've got Derrick Rose, whatever he has left. Granted, Thibodeau will probably play him over Tyus Jones and right. give him time. But the pieces that the Clippers would want to move, at least one, they'd want to include one of those point guards in there just to get off them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the Suns can come in and get that guy. Is like, okay, we're going to take this guy. We'll give you Troy Daniels and a second-round pick. Sure.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to add a little bit to this episode, because since we finished recording, it came out that Jimmy Butler's preferred location in terms of trade is the Miami Heat. And Woj tweeted out today that, and I quote, Phoenix's pursuit of a starting point guard could factor into the Jimmy Butler trade discussions as a potential third-team partner, league sources tell ESPN. If Minnesota trades for Goran Dragic in a Miami/Butler scenario, that could make Wolves point guard Jeff Teague available for the Suns. And that's quite significant because, well, A, Miami wasn't really, well, it wasn't at all in that first wave of teams that Jimmy Butler had indicated were his preferred destinations. I think, Paul, you said that he came up maybe in a little second wave of potential teams.
I can't remember the other teams that were up there, but definitely I do remember the Heat was part of that list. So it seems more like maybe the overtures to the original three teams weren't received as well, or just like the communication between the Wolves, they had nothing to offer that the Wolves were even interested in. So that group expanded, and now the Miami Heat, who are a team who are pretty averse to rebuilding, and they're kind of getting close to a time where they'd probably need to rebuild, are seeing this as an opportunity to do a reload instead.
Right.
So Pat Riley's pushing pretty hard, because he's getting to the end of his career in the NBA, and I think he wants to get one more kind of potential contender under his belt.
Sure, and that makes sense. And ultimately, you look at it from the Heat perspective, it makes a lot of sense because Dragic is 32. He's going to a season where after this year, he's going to have a player option for $19.2 million. And even assuming he takes that, he's kind of getting to that point where he's not going to get another big contract. If they can move on, free up some cap space, whether it be through trading him away or ultimately him leaving the team, might as well free up that cap space immediately and bring in a guy who is a young superstar in the NBA like Jimmy Butler to try to attract other teams. And I mean, from my perspective, I look at this and I see we look at the other guys who have come up in terms of potential point guards who the Suns might land when you're talking about the initial three teams that Jimmy Butler indicated he wanted to go to. And we talked about it before. You've got Beverly, you've got Dinwiddie, you've got Tyus Jones, you got Emilio Teodosic. Jesus. Anyway, Teague, from my perspective, and he's 30 years old as well, so he's a little bit up there in 30.
It's not a spring 30, chicken.
Yeah, 30, 31. He's 30, I think. He's up there in age, but he's shown more production over his career as a whole than any of those other four guys that have come up in discussions. I mean, if you look at his per 36 over the scope of his career versus the scope of the careers of those other guys, points, he is the highest number of points. Assists, he's the highest per 36 assists. His shooting percentages are right up there with a guy like Teodosic, who is a good shooter, and he's a career 36% 3-point shooter. On top of that,
what are his steals like?
His per 36 steals, 1.6 per game. Or I should say 1.6 per 36. And that is better than Teodosic, right there with Patrick Beverly, better than Dinwiddie, and below Tyus Jones. But of course, he has a smaller sample size, even when you extrapolate it out over the per 36. And I think the biggest thing that comes into play is you're talking about a guy in Jeff Teague who has played 670 NBA games and has started 535 of them. What the Suns are looking for right now in a potential trade is a starting caliber point guard. He has started the majority of the games he's played in the NBA. You look at Patrick Beverly, who's the next closest. Now, he started what I'm going to assume. I haven't crunched these numbers, but is a higher percentage in terms of percentage of games started, but he still is only at 251 games started and 302 games played. That being said, he also has some health concerns. Patrick Beverly has never played a season where he played more than 71 games. And the next season, in terms of the most games he plays, 67. Then after that, you get into the 50s. Then you get to the 40s, and then you get last year where he played 11 games. When you start talking about the number of games these guys have actually started in the NBA, the next highest number is Spencer Dinwiddie, who has only started 77 of his 185. Then you've got Tyus Jones, who started 11 of his 179, and Tia Dosic, who has started 36 of his 45. So if you want somebody that's going to come into this team and have starting experience, Jeff Teague, above and beyond. Better. Yeah, above and beyond is the guy. And ultimately, look at the worst case scenario. You know, let's say the Suns trade away, and we'll talk about this, whoever they might trade away to land a guy like Jeff Teague. Again, he had, I shouldn't say again, because I don't think I mentioned this yet. I talked about the other guys, but he has a player option next year as well for $19 million. If he accepts it, then so be it. You have a starting caliber point guard who's
right.
NBA ready, who is proven in the NBA, who is going to contribute to the development of the rest of this roster. If he declines it, then there's $19 million that is freed up under the cap that presumably, I mean, I'll assume that maybe at least one of the contracts that goes out in this trade is something that wouldn't be on the books next year. But you can assume that at least not all of the contracts that go out in this trade would be off the books next year. So you're getting some additional cap room. What do you think, Paul?
I'm pretty intrigued by it. I mean, I was looking at his stats, and I think he would fit in nicely with the team and kind of play that role, really, that what they need. I don't know why. I mean, maybe it's just because I didn't think about the idea of the Wolves looking to, you know, move on from Teague and maybe advance Tyus Jones or whatnot to the star role, or in the case of this possibility of obtaining Dragic in his place. So I didn't really think of him as that available. I mean, I knew he was, he's just a piece for Minnesota. I mean, he was a star, all-star a couple years back with that very, I don't know if I want to call it fluky, but very unique Hawks team that didn't really have a star, but like just won a ton. And I don't think it was more management issues that they chose to like disassemble that team and just kind of look to go to rebuild instead of trying to ride that out for much longer than they did. So then he moved on. He spent a little time with the Pacers, which I really don't remember, and has now been with Minnesota for the last season or so. And I think, I mean, yeah, it sounds like they're looking to possibly move on from him too. That doesn't mean he's a bad player. It's not the right situation. And I think the Suns could be a very good situation for him in that the offense would be, it's a motion offense that is very similar to what they ran in Atlanta back in the heyday of that group. So, and he also wouldn't, whereas also on that team, he was one of the primary offensive talents. He was one of the primary scorers. That's why he didn't make an all-star team. That wouldn't be his responsibility on the Suns. I mean, yes, his responsibility would be to make sure that the offense moves the way Igor wants it to move.
Mm-hmm.
And Booker and Ayton and some of the other guys would be those dedicated scorers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, let me just tell you this. His stat line from last year, Teague's, 14.2 points per game, 7 assists per game. He shot 37% from three-point range, and he shot 46.5% overall. That's what the Suns need. Like they need somebody that can be a distributor. And that's the thing. Like we look at all these other point guards. We're not looking for somebody that's going to be a 20-10 guy, because we continue to discuss how Booker's playmaking ability is improving. And that's going to pick up some of that slack. But if you get a guy that can bring in this type of playmaking ability, this
14
type
and 7?
Right. This type of ability to control the offense and the ability to shoot the ball.
It's hard to get 14 and 7.
Right. That's beautiful.
Right.
That's beautiful.
Exactly. Exactly. And he knows how to play team defense. I mean, he's not like individually the greatest defender in the world, but he's not a giant like sieve when it comes to defense. So that doesn't hurt either.
Right. And looking also just at the, you know, the advanced stats, when we start talking about assist percentage, he has the highest assist percentage of any of the other guys that have come up in terms of potential.
He's going to have the highest stats, except probably some defensive stats, which are all not completely reliable just because we haven't figured out how to properly quantify defense yet of any of the other guys available. I think that's pretty I would expect that to be pretty true. I mean, there may be some advanced stats which weirdly somebody else does better, but I think he's probably going to be on, if not the top one, top two or three. He's not going to, I don't expect to see him at the bottom of many of those.
Right. And I'm looking at the, you know, the conglomerate stats from their career. So obviously what I'm seeing is his, you know, defensive win shares are higher than everybody else. But as a whole, his win shares per 48 is the highest amongst the group. So, I mean, ultimately, and, you know, his value over replacement player, highest amongst the group. You're looking at a guy who, if this is something that the Suns can swing, it's really the best case scenario that I see based on what's been reported out there, what's potentially available out there, that the Suns can, you know, come out of this with then, which then leads into the question. Two parts. A, what do you think the Suns would have to give up to get Teague as a trade in this scenario? And what would you be willing for the Suns to give up to get Teague in this scenario?
I don't think, to answer the second one first, I don't think I'd be willing to give up much more than probably like Warren and Darrell Arthur. Maybe like a second round pick or something if we have to like shuffle some of those around for whatever reason. But at the same time, I think the Suns are in a position leverage-wise that they should be the ones being paid to help facilitate the trade beyond just getting Teague. It's like they're the ones who should get like, you know, like a second round pick. I mean, Miami, you know, if you're trading Jimmy Butler and the centerpiece of the return package is Goran Dragic, probably going to have to throw in a first round pick.
Mm-hmm.
That pick shouldn't come from the Suns. That should be a Miami pick. So, granted, I don't even know what year that would be based on, you know, the 2021 pick is with Philly right now. But there's going to have to be more coming in beyond, because I look at the piece and I look at Jeff Teague and I look at TJ Warren and Darrell Arthur as a bit of a wash in the sense that like it gets them off some money in the short term. Plus it provides them with a guy who can score a reasonable amount. Like
who's also like 6 years younger.
Right, exactly. And on a very reasonable $12 million contract that could easily be moved again if they want to move it. So I kind of look at that as a wash, particularly since from a Minnesota's leverage standpoint, if they're wanting to bring in Dragic, they have to get rid of Teague. Technically they don't, because they're losing, you know, they could run a 2-point guard system.
Yeah.
With like with Wiggins moving to the three, and then I don't even know who their four is, and then Cat at the five. But if they want to move on from having two, you know, starting caliber point guards, you know, you're wanting to push him out because you're bringing somebody else in. You kind of got to pay to push him out. a little bit. And that's where the Suns can take advantage of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, you'd look at it like Pat Riley, since, again, Butler didn't name Miami as one of his top three teams initially, is making a hard push. And obviously, now that Butler is starting to change his tune, that to me indicates that there's been some behind-the-scenes talk, and Riley's trying to sell him on this, and Riley wants to get him. So you have to recognize that there's a – I won't necessarily go as far as saying desperation, but there's a strong intent that he wants to get him. And if if Minnesota hasn't already made a deal with one of the top three teams that Butler initially identified, that indicates to me that those three teams aren't bringing something to the table that is, you know, creating any traction with them. So ultimately, Minnesota has to get rid of Butler at some point. They have to get something back. Otherwise, they run the risk of, I mean, maybe he's going to come up with some serious injury like Kawhi Leonard did last year. Otherwise, they just run the risk of him sitting out and then jetting, and they get nothing. Which obviously doesn't happen with San Antonio's situation, but there's a leverage point here for the Suns. And, you know, for the faults that we've identified with McDonough over the years and the issues that he's created on his own, he's shown a propensity to be able to get the most out of a bad situation. Now what we see here is him walking into what should be a good situation in terms of the Suns having some ability to try to dictate what happens with this trade and what happens with this scenario. And if he can translate what he's been able to create out of bad situations that he's brought upon himself into creating something wonderful for the Suns in a good situation for them, now is the time for him to show it. And again, we go back to what we said a number of times. McD's at a make or break point. This is a great opportunity for him to make something.
Right. But at the same time, I mean, the Suns did call about Jimmy Butler, and whatever the asking price was, it was exorbitantly too high. And then I guess conversations evolved, and I guess Teague was brought up. Or according to Gambo, I think Gambo said that the Suns have not directly spoken to the Wolves about Teague. So I guess I'm a little confused on the conflicting reports there, because I mean, yeah, it's entirely possible the Suns haven't spoken to the Wolves about Teague, but I don't usually see Woj going into conjecture.
Right.
So it's kind of weird that he brought up Teague as the possibility without some type of, you know, at least intrigue on the Suns' part as with regards to the type of player that they're looking to bring in.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, I think we can agree on the fact that if the Suns can somehow do what we've been thinking they were going to do for the past multiple weeks and do what we've thought they would be doing once Butler started demanding a trade and ended up walking out of that with Jeff Teague, beautiful.
I don't hate it.
All right, well, let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's talk more direct Suns.
Okay.
More direct Suns. So day one of training camp was today.
Yeah.
The immediate returns, and this was in reference in an article by Evan Sidery over on Brightside, specifically discussing Ayton and how he looked in day one. The initial returns are great, which is fantastic.
But it's also day one of
training camp. And it's also day one of training camp, sure. But Evan mentioned that Ayton's teammates were gushing about how fast he's picking up concepts already. The Suns are really looking like they're kind of developing this, you know, four-out type of mentality. And DeAndre Ayton is the kind of guy that you expect to be able to draw the defense down low, whether it be through a post-up, whether it be through a pick-and-roll, and allow those outside guys to have an open shot. As long as if he has the ball in his hands, he can make the right decision as to who to go to. Evan brought up a good point that Ayton so far is in a situation that he wasn't really used to at U of A, and that's because you saw so often Ayton and Ristich both playing together. And those are two guys that are going to be necessarily down low. Right. Well, Ayton, I think, and both of them to a certain extent could step out a little bit, but the way that offense flowed, it was those guys were down low and that was just clogging everything up down there. U of A didn't have the type of three-point shooters that, you know, the Suns offenses or the Suns roster is designed to have this season. And he also was very positive in his comments in terms of what Ayton's been able to pick up so far in camp. And that's one thing that we talked about how important this camp is for the Suns, because it's a brand new offense.
Right.
You have to get these guys integrated. They have to, and there was an article today on Arizona Central or ArizonaSports.com talking about how this camp is important because these players need to learn how to react in the offense as opposed to having to think about what the right move is.
Right.
And if DeAndre Ayton's picking things up quick, then that's just going to help everybody else, because again, if we're looking at a one low four out type of situation, he's the key guy, kind of.
Right, yeah. And I mean, it's a situation, particularly those comments coming from Anderson. This is a guy who played with Dwight Howard in his prime,
mm-hmm.
and played with a young Anthony Davis.
And if I may interject really quickly, he referenced exactly that.
Right.
How it was similar to having Davis and Howard and how they would be able to effectuate that type of offense.
Right. And so, I mean, I think that's what McDonough and Igor and whatnot were envisioning when they decided to go with Ayton over some of the other guys who were available. Literally everybody who was available.
Not just some of them, all of them.
But, you know, I don't want to, you know, bring back to the Luka Doncic debate at all, because that's over and done with.
Who's currently starting at the four for the Mavericks?
Well, I mean, when you look at their lineup, that kind of makes sense a little bit, which is, I mean, that's interesting that Dirk is like, yeah, I'm just going to be a bench guy now.
Yeah, it's crazy.
The way Dirk has like managed his career is more unique than Duncan, I would almost say.
I think Dirk's done a great job of treating the organization well, just like the organization has treated him well. You know,
right.
they've kept him on the team, and kudos to Mark Cuban. I love Mark Cuban. If I was an NBA owner, I would be Mark Cuban. And I'm talking like crazy Mark Cuban back when he was sitting by the bench all the time, like that. And his teams were winning, so his antics weren't that outlandish like Robert Sarver's antics sometimes get
right. When
his teams aren't winning. But he's treated Dirk as Dirk should be treated over the past few years.
While
Dirk's been starting to decline in his abilities.
Right. I mean, I'd avoid like some of the behind the scenes stuff that's apparently
sure. Yeah, that I would have a little more oversight in that regard. But as far as the public eye goes, I
and the basketball team relationship.
Sure.
But yeah, back to what we were talking about.
Back to the point.
Ayton is the crux of what they want to do offensively. Booker is the star. Ayton's the focal point to an extent of like, if you're running four out, you got to have a guy down low who draws attention.
Right. Yeah. If he's not skilled enough to draw that attention, then that system's not going to work. That's a perfect point.
And I mean, from what we hear, and hopefully it's true, his skills actually extend beyond that limited role. Mm-hmm. But it'll be interesting to see, particularly being that he's a rookie. It's, you know, we want to keep it simple for him, as simple as possible, because so much is being thrown at him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there was, I think the Ringer did an article on DeAndre Ayton a while back where they're basically talking about, is he going to be Karl-Anthony Towns or is he going to be Clint Capella? And they made the argument that he should be Clint Capella rather than Karl-Anthony Towns because Clint Capella is better for the team. And I think he can be somewhere in the middle there, because I think the difference is, in this case, is maybe from a defensive standpoint, and it seems like he's trying to pick up the defensive stuff, and maybe because he basically played out of position in college and he just really wasn't a four, but you move him to the five and it just kind of clicks a little bit. But even from an offensive standpoint, he has to be a threat that Capella isn't, mm-hmm. to make the offense that sure. the Suns want to run work. I mean, it may not run through him per se. I mean, Booker's going to create it. Whoever's the point guard's going
to
create
it. But teams need to gravitate towards him nonetheless.
He needs to have gravity that they can't just ignore him down low, because he can just work guys over if he's like single teamed.
I think he's the perfect guy to have in this system. And I'm saying that not based on the feedback we're getting from day one of training camp. I'm saying that based on what I believe he can turn into. And the right pieces around him, the right development of those players around him, and I think the Suns, again, have a very bright future. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, I'll say again one more time.
Again.
We're where we want to be right now.
Right.
In terms of Booker's here, Booker's locked up. We got the number one pick. We're presumably putting guys around those two guys that are going to help effectuate a system that a new hired coach, who everyone was very positive about, they're going to play into that system that he wants to put in place. And now I'm getting even more excited about the Suns, notwithstanding mm-hmm. the point guard situation. I just think that the Suns are finally at that point where, here we go.
Let's do it.
Here it is. I mean, this is what the team is. This is what the team's moving towards. And you know what? If it blows up, then we're back where we started and we're in for another 8 long years, Suns fans. But I'm very confident that it's not going to turn out that way. Now, is this season going to be – the season's not going to be some huge breakout year where everything's going to be great. People are going to bitch about it. Suns aren't going to win a whole lot of games still. But they have the pieces in place, and with – the class of next year's free agency, and hopefully those types of guys who across the league, we've talked about how Booker is very well respected,
right?
As a more future so superstar,
than he is in media circles,
right? Yeah, like I don't hear a lot of people talking. I don't hear like KD and folks talking about Donovan Mitchell all that much. But Booker has reaped praise from a lot of those types of guys, and hopefully that plays some role into where the Suns can go next offseason, and we're just able to build on what has been being built over the past few years and what we now hope is finally coming to fruition.
Right.
Now, that's happening while the West seems to get stronger and stronger, but hey, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Gonna have to do what we can do with it.
The Suns are going to try to win. And if you look at the record that they had last year before Booker got injured, before they got – and I think a lot of the injuries that like the Suns had last year were – they held the guys out for precautionary purposes. If they were on another team that was actually winning, they would have played.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the Suns could have easily gotten into the low to mid-30s in wins, but – Booker was out so much. They had Tyson Chandler out. Warren was out as long as he was with that mystery head thing. Those guys weren't there. And if we can have a healthy season this year, I feel like the team has improved. So I don't see why, even in a stronger West, the Suns can't get into the mid-30s, which I would find successful. I think they'd be just outside the window to compete for a playoff spot, but they're in the window to compete for the window to the playoff spot.
Right. No, I got you.
And then next year would really be the year that hopefully that improvement shows to one of those bigger time free agents, like, hey, this is a situation where I got a bunch of guys who are going to build and grow. I'm not catching these guys at their peak and then I'm going to join to watch them crumble around me. I'm going to join and they're going to grow into me.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, let's look at it in comparison to the 76ers and what they've done.
Right.
You know, they went from in 15-16 winning 10 games to the following year winning 28 games to the following year winning 52 games. Now are the Suns going to make a jump to 52? Probably not. But they're progressing, hopefully, in that direction. You alluded to
sometimes those jumps are like way bigger than you expected.
Like the we talked about last time, the 04-05 Suns.
Yeah,
you alluded to earlier during the Nash era when it was this is the year we're going to win the title. I feel like now it's this is the year we're going to win more games.
Yeah,
and that's step one, and then maybe next year it's okay. We're going to make a strong push for the playoffs, but again, time will tell. This is officially McDonough's team. This is McDonough's roster.
Right.
And the make it or break it time starts this season.
Yeah.
If they come out and win 15, 17, 20 games next year, okay. It's a problem. Barring any significant injuries.
Right.
But if the roster is intact, people are healthy, and that's what they come up with, then maybe we can start to be a little bit concerned. But this is a building year. The following year, I think, is the year when we start saying, okay, this is right or this is wrong. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at So Says Jay and Paul.
At Dervish of Whirl.
And the podcast is at Fan the Flames NBA. As always, thank you very much for listening. And depending on when you're listening, have yourself a good morning, good afternoon, or good evening.
How'd you get the beans above the frank? Just wanna hear you say-